will please come to order. The next, just barely, we have a quorum. The committee of the first bill, or the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 82. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 82, as introduced by Senator Ross, and act relating to game bird farms, amending the date for expiration of licenses and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 82, Game Bird Farm Licenses Expiration, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Gay, Halverson, Hutchings, Yeagie, Crone, and Pieperinen, signed by Representative Davison, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 82 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to our good representative from the Capital City.
Representative Hutchings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the 62nd, this bill is, it just contains a date change for when game bird farmers can renew their licenses. Currently, the expiration date falls right in the middle of hunting season, and it's creating a small burden for them that they have to keep track of hunting and keep track of what they have to do for the licenses. So we're just asking on page 1 of the bill, line 13, that we can change the date that their license expires from February to April 1st. Barring any questions, I ask for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of... There is a question. Representative Watson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the date being April 1st, that is the day after the last day of the season for game preserve hunting. Is that going to be an issue?
Representative Hutchings?
Mr. Chairman, according to the information we got in our committee, no. The pheasant farmer that was there to testify, he was very, very happy with this date.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Davison's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 82 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. The House Senate File 82 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 105 for your consideration. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 105 from the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to school facilities projects, providing appropriations for school facility projects for the remainder of the biennial period commencing July 1st, 2012, providing definitions, modifying construction schedule parameters, and providing for effective dates. Mr. Chairman, to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 105, engrossed school capital construction, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stebson, and Wallace, signed by Representative Wallace, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Wallace?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate File 105. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill number Senate File 105 do pass.
Representative Wallace, do you want to go through the bill for us?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I will do my darndest, but I'm actually hoping that Mr. Chairman will show up because he's the fellow who really knows the details of this, but we'll do our best. And
I got a feeling.
Right there with you, buddy. There is a standing committee amendment number one, and Mr. Chairman, I would move that at this time. And I guess we'll just work through the standing committee amendment. What the standing committee amendment does is on beginning on page one, line five, after the colon, it inserts providing appropriation for the necessary assessment of building safety and security, and it deletes and providing for effective dates and inserts providing for an effective date. Just kind of some cleanup language. On page 2, line 10, it's just changing a date that has to do with the school capital construction account. So it changes that to remainder of the fiscal biennium beginning July 1, 2012. And deletes on the next line, 11, the 2013. On page 3, line 17, changes the after the 2, deletes the line and changes that amount to $170,986,481. Page 3, line, then on page 4, we've got another change that moves it from $3.6 million to $4 million. As we get down into the rest of this standing committee amendment, I think we're going to hear about this. This has to do with the Laramie Junior High School. And as I recall from the committee work on this, it had to do with, was this the track and changing that up so that In the process of building the new school, we needed to do some things with the track, and that was the reason for the additional dollars there. And then on page 9, line 10, this has to do with Mr. Chairman is in the room.
Yes.
And has probably saved my neck. Mr. Chairman, I would like to turn the explanation of this bill over to the Chairman of Appropriations.
Thank you, Representative Wallace. You did a very admirable job. Representative Chairman Harshman,
thank you,
Mr.
Chairman,
have the floor.
Thank the good Vice Chair of Appropriations. He's been saving us all session, and appreciate you. We were indisposed and apologize. And, of course, the Vice Chair has moved this bill. And I would walk you through the bill quickly, and then there's Committee of the Whole. You walked through the bill already?
No, we haven't.
Okay, and then there's a standing committee amendment that does a few things to the bill, and I think that'd be more appropriate to do it at that time. So, Mr. Chairman, if I could just quickly walk through the bill.
You may.
Okay, members, if you would turn to, this is school CapCon, which adds, this is really the second of three appropriations bills. Remember, we talked how we used to have school CapCon and the AMLs in the budget bill. We've since separated that out. So this is the second of appropriations bill that you'll see. And we have it in school CapCon. We're very specific with projects. Used to be a block grant thing. We'd throw out there and we never knew what would happen. And now, as appropriators, we pulled that back into this house and appropriate for projects. So members on page 2, line 14 are design projects. $4 million. We changed the effective date of this. You'll see that in the amendment. And you can see those. Carbon 1 High School, going over to page 3, Park 1 Middle School, Fremont K-8, and Natrona Elementary, a Goshen Elementary, and a Bighorn 2 High School, and the total on line 6. That's on page 3, line 6. And then the next section is on line 15, where it says capital construction. Again, we changed the effective date on that to July 1st of this, effective immediately. So on this CapCon, you can see $170.5 million, and it starts, you can see the categories, needs index school district, starts on page 4. So Park 1 Middle School, Carbon 1 High School, Fremont 21 K-8, and Natrona Elementary, a Goshen Elementary, and Albany 1 High School, Uinta 1 Elementary, Fremont 14 Elementary, a Laramie 1 Junior High, the Standing Committee Amendment addresses some language that, and a Natrona 1 Alternative, a Bighorn 2 High School, and a Campbell 1 Elementary. And so that totals $175.86. It gets adjusted a little bit in this amendment, but there is no change to the bottom line of this bill. We did not add any money to this bill. We moved some from different accounts. So there's not $1 more appropriated than the way it came out of the Senate. Okay, members, then on the bottom of page 4, line 22 are demolitions, and you can see $2.4 million for demolitions, and those carry over to page 5. There's an admin building in Natrona, a demolition at Washkey 1, and a high school in Park 1. Okay, and then, members, the next is land acquisitions, starts on line 14 and 15, $2.9 million. You can see on the bottom of line 23 and 24 on page 5, a new school that will be in Bighorn District 4, Campbell County School District, Fremont County 25 over on page 6, and Sheridan County District 2 on the top of page 6. Next, Mr. Chairman, on lines 4 and 5 on page 6 are the ancillary buildings. These are like bus barns, admin buildings, and it carries down through lines 10, 11, 12, 13, etc. You can see Lincoln 2 admin building for 3.1 and a Carbon 1 bus barn for 3.4 for ancillary buildings. Next, we do construct tracks in this state. Mr. Chairman, you can see the track construction projects start at the top of page 7. Johnson 1 renovation of a high school track, Lincoln 1 a study of the track remedy, and Laramie 2 renovation of the high school sports track and field. Okay, Mr. Chairman, on component level projects start on line 11, page 7, and they total $4.597 million. That's on line 14. And you can see those begin, and they have a code beside them. The category on line 21, you can see that it has an E, and I'll show you where that index is at, but that's Platt 2 Elementary for $150,000. You can see the S for Carbon 1 K-12 school, and then an E for Campbell 1 Elementary. So if you'd flip over, ladies and gentlemen, page 8, and I'll show you, you can see the rest of those components that go on down lines 1 through 15, and they have different codes. The codes then start on the bottom of page 8. C means building component with a life expectancy of 20 years. So this is a substantial improvement. It carries over to the top of page 9. E means building envelope. I means illumination. And S means components pertaining to safety, security, or health. These components are issues that are probably too big for a smaller school district's major maintenance budget, but they're not quite in the level of CapCon. We've struggled with this for the last 10 years. We used to have what we called a minor CapCon account, kind of did away with that, and we call it components now. Okay, Mr. Chairman, there's in this on lines 10, 11, 12, and 13 on page 9, it's the unanticipated costs. We built in this little bit of, and this is where you'll see a little movement of dollars in the standing committee amendment out of that unanticipated. And then there's some unobligated also that's out there that we appropriate from. Okay, Mr. Chairman, on page 9, line 15, the Senate added this, $10 million for planning design remedies to address school building capacity needs. There's some real capacity issues. We've never really known the full extent of it. Just the last couple of years during our reorganization of this department and our statute changes to recognize capacity. We used to lump condition, capacity, and a thing called functionality. And I'll say a thing called functionality in that terms. It was hard to average those all together, and sometimes a school with great condition had 70% of that average was condition would mask the capacity score, which was only like 35% of the total. So you might be bulging at the seams in a great building and we would never address capacity. The inverse could be true where you had a building that was really in not very good condition, but it was underutilized, so the capacity score is very high. So it kept this school down on the list, and we really never, so we've separated, this body has separated condition and capacity. We look at them in separate silos. So this is an attempt by the Senate to go out and start looking at some of these issues. And according to our, and we've done a pretty extensive study, we used to have on the internet, and you could see it yourself, the diagram, the exact blueprints of every building in the state. We have now taken that off the internet for obvious reasons. But we know more about our buildings. We know where every closet's at, every teaching space, all those things at every building in the state. Now, what we know now is that Fremont 25, Laramie 1, Campbell County, Bighorn 4, Park 6, and Natrona County probably have some capacity issues. And these are going to be studied to figure out exactly what needs to be done with that. So the Senate added that. Okay, Mr. Chairman, and then this is a part I think folks have been interested in generally on page 10 and 11, and it's for these capital construction projects. We went back in, and I think the key is that on line 22, page 10, these parameters are not intended to be quantifiable. This was kind of another reason to get slowed down in school CapCon, and those parameters are on page 11, and it starts on line 10. Maximize cost savings at or below project amounts appropriated by law. Roman 2, optimize Wyoming workforce opportunities at a predictable, manageable level. Roman 3, provide for construction throughout the state in a manner uniform as possible. And number 4, please, number 4 on page 12, prevent unnecessary delays in initiating and implementing building facility needs. So there's a little bit of, there was an amendment put on page 11, line 3, and I think there's a committee of the whole amendment that will address this. So any decision rendered by the director under this subparagraph is a discretionary determination not subject to judicial review. So the construction schedule developed in accordance with these parameters shall be considered parameters. That, read into that. We'll talk about that. Okay, and so, Mr. Chairman, that's the bill, and I'd turn it over to the good member of appropriations from the Senate of the State to explain the standing committee amendment.
Thank you. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going through the standing committee amendment, we made essentially 4 changes to the bill in the standing committee amendment. And they're scattered a little bit through the standing committee amendment, so I'll just walk you through. But first of all, you'll see that there has been a change, and the good chairman pointed out on page 4, line 9, the Laramie 1 Junior High project, that it came to our attention that there was really an under budgeting for there was a hiccup in a budgeted amount for both a parking lot and a road that school facilities had not included in the budget. It's certainly needed for the project. So we increased that amount, that $3.6 million on line 9, to a full $4 million. We increased it by $400,000 to pay for that additional road and parking lot. And you'll see down on line 30 of the amendment, both lines 25 through 30, that's where the money comes from, these these unobligated funds that the chairman was talking about. So you'll see we went from $6.6 million in unobligated down to $6.2, and that's where that $400,000 comes from. So we're not increasing the amounts expended under the bill, but we are shifting those around a little bit. The second thing that we did, you'll see in Section C on the bottom of page one of the Standing Committee Amendment, this relates to the Natrona County High School projects. There were a few lots, I think there were four lots in total, that the high school acquired prior to the actual approval of the project because they had the opportunity to do so, and so really trying to maximize their money, they acquired those. So there's been like a total of 25 lots. There's been a significant amount of land that's been acquired as part of this project. School Facilities has reimbursed the district for, you know, 26 of the 30 lots. These four, because of the timing of the acquisition, School Facilities has had heartburn over reimbursing those. But so this is not new money. This $500,000 comes from the project amount, and it just directs the School Facilities to reimburse for those lots just as they did for all the other lots. If you turn to the second page, another section, and this is again scattered throughout, but let's talk about D first at the top of two. As has been discussed previously on this floor, there is a task force currently looking at school security. They need funds to be able to move forward with that task force. This is out of unobligated, unexpended funds. So these are already appropriated funds of $250,000 that we give authority to spend on the work of the task force. And then Section D on that page two, this is the fourth change. And what it does is it makes effective immediately the appropriation already made for the high school project in Natrona County. And we heard testimony that things have moved quicker. As long as permits are issued, they should be able to start work on the project in April. If we don't pass this amendment, no money can begin flowing to that project until July. So they're ready to go now. And what this amendment does is it says that those already appropriated amounts can be expended effective immediately. So those are the four major changes, and I'd take any questions you may have on the Standing Committee Amendment. If not, I'd go ahead and call for the question.
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, just a question on the amendment. Representative, on the amendment D, you know, that's D there on line 17 of page 2, that authorized the expenditure right away for that one particular school. What about other schools that are ready?
Majority what?
Mr. Chairman, nobody else came to us indicating that there was an immediate need, but let me refer you back to the first page. And what it does, if you look at the top part of that where we take the July 1st, 2012 out, or take the July 1st, 2013 out on line 11 and insert the July 1st, 2012 language, that has the effect of really any monies, if they're needed, any monies currently appropriated, if they're needed, they could be expended because we've essentially moved that 2013 back to July 1st, 2012, the beginning of the biennium. So we didn't hear any testimony along those lines, but this amendment would take care of that situation if it arose.
Any more discussion? You have heard the motion on the... Representative Yagi, I missed you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess a question on this amendment and on the bill, and maybe the good chairman and the bringer of the amendment can answer. We had some schools that were moved around, and the amount on letter D going to Natrona High School, that project was kind of moved up around, and some other schools got moved down because of this. Is this appropriation on D part of the overall thing? And I guess I'll just ask this question not only about the amendment, but the whole bill. Are we pretty good with these right here that they're not going to move around? Because in the last, you know, years we've had people going up and going down, and it's really created a lot of consternation. And, of course, we've had people over the school facilities, and we've had changes, and maybe good chairman could not only address this in this amendment, but the whole bill when he gets around to it. Thank you.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and appreciate the question. And just to explain this process again, we have a school capital construction committee, and for the first 8-9 years, the committee might meet once a year, was not very involved, and now we've changed all that. I know the good chairman of education sits on the good representative from Sweetwater and Campbell and others. And so now we're required by statute to meet at least once quarterly, and so we're involved in this whole process now. And the thing you pointed out about all this movement, and that was when we didn't attach dollars to projects. We just block granted to the commission, and they would move projects around. So you're right. You'd be on the list, off the list, on the list, off the list. And there was really no remedy. And so I think out of frustration and out of it just didn't seem to quite work, it's ended up in this body, really. And so we've set up this process that when you're on the list, you keep moving up the list, and we fully fund you then. So once you make it to that, if it is construction, let's say, or if it's an ancillary building or a track, we fully fund it. And in the past, you might get a partial, you might get something, and then you fall off. That doesn't happen anymore. So, and now in regards to this on D and on this school in Natrona County, this was appropriated last year. But this one was actually about number 4 on the list and got moved down at the other end of the hall. Pure, raw, you know, it's the way it happened. And that's what happens in these two bodies. It got moved down. Others were moved up that you can see on this list in front of it and funded immediately last year. This project was funded last year, but not released until this coming July. So what this amendment says, hey, these houses have been cleared, the dirt's moving, contractors are already in this over 10%, designers, and they got to start paying people. And this is the next, and so we're trying to say, let's let this money, instead of waiting until July, let's cut it loose now so we can get these Wyoming people working. They're ready, they're there working now, and we don't want to shut it down. So I hope I answered your question. Thank you.
The question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The Standing Committee Amendment 2, Senate File 105, has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Pat Patton.
Mr. Chairman, a Committee of the Whole Amendment, I move its adoption, being Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. On page 11, line 3, after the period, delete the balance of that line. What I'm removing or suggesting to be removed is the part of the paragraph that says, any decision rendered by the director under this subparagraph is a discretionary determination and not subject to review. What I'm trying to do is to bring to our attention that this entire movement that we've had for the last number of years of building buildings across the state has been one step of removal of the public away from the public education system. Now, I know, just as you know, that we're doing that not because it was what we wanted to do, but rather because of what the court decision suggested that be done. And we have implemented that, and we're proud of it, because we are interested in public education. However, in the construction side of all this, uniformity and these items that you see under the subparagraphs of Roman numeral 1, 2, and 3 suggest that the director, by the director's decision, it is inviolate, and it's discretionary and not subject to necessary, I don't think, or compatible relationship with the individual school districts. Some school districts don't have building people that are there. Other districts, the larger districts, actually do. They do a good job of planning, and particularly the location and the construction management itself. So I'm trying to encourage cooperation as opposed to dictation from the state. Urge your adoption of the amendment.
Representative Pepperini.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I stand for the amendment and for the bill here. We do have some serious concerns with the proposed changes on page 11, lines 1 through 3, giving the school facilities director more power and taking away due process. It seems that the director has been given more power than the school facility commission. This is a major problem with school construction, as the school facility director only has to answer to the governor and doesn't care what the commissioner or the districts have to say. The plan should be to give the commission more say in the decisions. Again, on the amendment and for the amendment and for the bill.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising on and against the amendment, we have met the obligation of the Campbell decision to build the buildings that needed to be built. This provision in the bill protects us from lawsuits, from frivolous lawsuits, really, because I believe any lawsuit that might be brought would be frivolous, because the mandates have been met by the court. This protects the state, and it protects the legislature, and it protects this piece of legislation, and I would urge you to vote no on the amendment.
Question has been called.
Some of my closest friends have been attorneys, and they would laugh at this. They'd say, if you think it's not subject to judicial review, we'll take it to court and find out.
Any others? No. This is a question on the amendment of the Committee of the Whole. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Amendment did not pass. And division has been called. All those in favor, please stand up. The amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. You've heard the motion on this. You've heard the question. The question having been called, all those in favor say aye on this bill.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 105 has passed. Representative Crone would like to have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the House, please join me in welcoming one of my constituents and a member of the Northwest College Board of Trustees who's in town, John Housel, up there. Welcome to the House, John.
Thank you. I would like to, in fact, welcome all the junior college trustees who are here today. I think there's more than just John. And would you please stand up, and we will welcome you to the Wyoming House. Thank you very much. I'm sorry I couldn't name you all, but welcome to the House of Representatives. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Joint.
Mr. Chair.
Joint File, yes. Oh, pardon me. Representative Campbell, I do see you in the back there. Coleman. Oh, my gosh.
Can I have privilege of the floor, Mr. Chair? I just wanted to point out in the South Gallery, the Sheridan High School interns are here, Gunnar Adine and Paul Static. And I just wanted to mention that Paul Static was recently accepted to the Naval Academy, which is a pretty big accomplishment.
Yes, you know, I'd like to add to that, Representative Coleman, that I had the pleasure of interviewing Paul, and he's just an absolutely outstanding candidate, will be a great naval officer in his later career. Representative Walter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While we're sending accolades on Mr. Static up in the balcony, I'd like to also inform you he was the president of the Senate at Boise State this last summer.
Oh, thank you. Representative Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not very often we get folks who travel down from Casper. You know that place with number one on your license plate, number one in your heart. And I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine, Charlie Robinson from Casper. Stand up.
Representative Northup.
And also, Mr. Chairman, if I may, there's many people who have traveled from Northwest College here. It's farther than Casper. I'd just like to say that President Paul Prestwich is here, Paul Fees is here, Carolyn Danko, trustee, and Jim Vogt.
Yay! Yay!
Majority Leader, Representative Goggles.
Mr. Chairman, not to be outdone. from Fremont County, number 10. On a scale of 1 to 10, we're number 10. Our president from Central Wyoming College, Dr. Joanne McFarland. Former chairman, Caroline Phillips. Let's give him a hand.
Majority Leader Brown. If we ever get there. Okay. The next bill for your consideration is Senate Joint File 1. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 1, as introduced by Senator Ross, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution to remove the requirement that a person be a resident of the state of Wyoming to serve as a trustee of the University of Wyoming, limiting the number of non-residents who may serve as trustees. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate Joint Resolution 1 in gross qualifications for University of Wyoming trustee, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasperic, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Summers, and Winter, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 38 do pass, And I'll turn the explanation of that over to the good representative from, I'm going to get it here in a minute, District 14, better known as our
joint resolution. No.
Bad hands. This is a joint resolution 38, and I'll turn the
mic.
We're going to get this straight in a minute. Now we're on joint resolution number one, qualifications for the University of Wyoming trustee, and I'll turn the explanation over to the good representative from House District 14.
Majority Leader Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Senate Joint Resolution 1, and it has to do with a constitutional amendment. The Constitution as it presently stands prescribes the trustees be qualified electors from the state of Wyoming, and you can't really get that from the bill. On page 2, this is all existing language except what shows on page 2. And on page 2, in the new language, it says not more than two trustees may be non-residents of the state, notwithstanding the provisions of Article 6, Section 15 of the Constitution. The sponsor of this bill started out with the idea that not all trustees of the university would have to be or ought to be residents of the state. And we have some, there's different numbers around, but the number I'm pretty confident with is there's 88,000 alum from the University of Wyoming who reside outside the state. And by the constitutional language as it exists at the present time, none of them are eligible to serve on the Board of Trustees. That's because Article 6, Section 15, which we ran into after the sponsor got this going, Article 6, Section 15 of the Constitution pertains to qualifications for office, and it says no person except a qualified elector may be elected or appointed to any civil or military office in the state. Well, a qualified elector has to be a resident of the state. So Article 7, Section 17, which is all the existing language that's in here, says the Board of Trustees will consist of not less than 7 members, and they are considered under the Constitution to be civil offices in the state, so they had to be qualified electors. So this is a constitutional amendment. It's a precursor to the bill that follows. That would, and the new language says that two of the trustees may be non-residents of the state in spite of, notwithstanding, in spite of is really what it means, Article 6, Section 15. The part of this bill that probably received the most attention, and this is something I've learned with these constitutional amendments, is the explanatory language that's going to go on the ballot. That is so important to clearly explain a constitutional amendment to the voters. And the penalty for not doing that is that they won't vote yes or no, they just won't vote. And that's the same as a no vote because it takes a majority of those who vote in order to pass a constitutional amendment. So the really critical language, I think, on page 3 that we spent a lot of time on says the adoption of this amendment would allow the governor to appoint not more than 2 non-residents of the state to serve as University of Wyoming trustees. The governor would not be required to appoint any non-resident as a trustee. All appointments to the Board of Trustees are with the advice and consent of the Wyoming Senate. That's as clear, I think, as we could figure out how to make it to try to clearly explain what the amendment is and explain what it's not. So with that, Mr. Chairman, it is a Senate joint resolution. I would urge your favorable vote on this, and since it's a constitutional amendment on third reading, it would require a two-thirds vote of this body to adopt and put on the ballot. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for questions.
The question being called. Oh, not yet. Representative
Dwanitzer.
Dwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chairman, just the basic question on why now, after 120-some years. Is there an impetus behind this, or the board's not getting along, or we're missing expertise, or I just was looking for some more rationale before we make a change to our Constitution. It's a fairly big deal in my mind, so just looking for some answers to the impetus of why.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a question for the bringer. If wanting to make the language that would go on the ballot as clear as possible, could you talk about the inclusion of the last sentence in the ballot language? Is it really necessary? Thanks.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to the question, why now, I think it's a question that's been building, and the Senate sponsor decided it was time to bring it. And I guess, you know, after the first year of the existence of the University of Wyoming, maybe we had five alum outside the state. The second year we had more, and it's a number that's grown and grown and grown. And it's just come to the attention of the sponsors of this bill, and I think of many others, that there's a tremendous amount of talent. There are some very talented people who have graduated from our university, who are CEOs of major corporations and hold important governmental posts, and who could not serve as a trustee. And if you'll trust me a little bit on that, when I get to the next bill, I will discuss the rest of the way that this unfolded. This is purely the constitutional part. As to the last sentence, I don't think it would be necessary to put it in there. I think that in the explanation on the ballot, it was thought that that might give some additional comfort to the fact that that it's not purely the governor's discretion who's appointed. And just reminds voters that those appointments are subject to the advice and consent of the Senate. It doesn't have to be on there. It was felt that perhaps that would give some additional comfort that it's not purely discretionary on the part of the governor.
Chairman Lockhart. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that Joint Senate Resolution 1-1 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Joint Senate Resolution 1 has passed the Committee of the Whole. A division has been called? No? Okay. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 17. The reading clerk will read the bill. Oh, 38, pardon me. Senate File 38. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 38.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I did call for the division on Senate Joint Resolution 1.
I didn't hear you.
I called it.
Yes,
it was pretty
that's
loud.
Fine.
Thank
that's
you,
fine.
Sir.
Okay. All those in favor of the Joint Resolution 1, please stand. Joint Senate Resolution 1 has passed. Okay. were 34 ayes, making it a majority of the whole. As a reminder, it will be two-thirds on the final vote. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 38. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 38, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to education, modifying the membership of the University of Wyoming Board of Trustees, providing qualifications, making the act contingent upon passage of a constitutional amendment as specified, specifying legislative findings, specifying implementation, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 38 engrossed, University of Wyoming Board of Trustees, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasperic, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Somers, and Winters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee, I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 38 do pass, and turn the explanation over to the good representative from House District 14.
Majority Leader Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a companion bill. It's contingent on the passage of the constitutional amendment. I see maybe I have some work to do on the constitutional amendment. I will see what I can do about this. The original thought by this bill sponsor was that we'd have a constitutional amendment that allowed two members of the Board of Trustees to be non-residents, and we would increase the Board of Trustees from 12 to 14. That was the original thought. We had testimony in committee from a former chairman of the Board of Trustees who said, well, you know, it would be good to get the Board of Trustees on an odd number because they have tied. And so 12 is a tie, and 14 could tie. So if we were to get on an odd number, then we could either add 1 and go to 13 or add 2 and go to 15. I have to tell you, there's some resistance from the board to get any larger than is absolutely necessary. And there are some university boards in the country that are too big, and the size of those boards is being reduced. So what the Senate Education Committee did was propose that we add 1 to get us onto an odd number. So if the constitutional amendment passed, and if this passed, the board would be enlarged from 12 to 13, and that's actually statutory on our part because the Constitution requires us to have at least 7. And we have 12. That's within our purview. We could go down to 7. We could go to 100. That's up to us by statute. And so by statute, by this statute, we would enlarge the board by 1 from 12 to 13 and then follow the constitutional amendment and say no more than 2, because the constitutional amendment will just say that, well, it'll say no more than 2 can be, or up to 2, I think it says up to 2, no more than 2 may be non-residents of the state. This would track in with the Constitution then as it would be amended, and say no more than 2 appointed trustees shall be residents of a state other than Wyoming. And then I think the really nice language that I hope will give people a lot of comfort is on page 2, lines 6 through 10. And that says, any person appointed as a trustee who is not a resident of Wyoming shall possess verifiable and demonstrable interest in past and present interactions with the university, which are reflective of commitment to the educational mission of the university. So that was an addition on an amendment to try to address concerns held by some that we might just get, I don't know, some person from maybe that would buy their way onto the board. Somebody out there who would say, well, if I donate so much money to the university, then would you make me a trustee? And so this language says, no, that's not good enough. that person would have to be somebody who possessed a verifiable and demonstrable interest in and past interactions with the university, reflective of a commitment to the school. So that's the extent of the statute. I think the statute helps flesh out what's trying to be accomplished with the constitutional amendment. It would add one member to the board, allow two of those members to be non-residents. There truly are, I have to tell you, there truly are, I can't mention names on the floor. I don't even know how to tell you, but if you want to know, come and ask me, and I'll tell you the names of some. There are some truly talented and truly accomplished people, alums of our university out there, who are doing remarkable things in the world, and they're not eligible to be trustees of the university. And if they can show that verifiable and demonstrable connection to the university, then the thought is that this would be a good addition to our Board of Trustees and would help our university in its research mission and its international presence. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for questions.
Chairman Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had some questions, I guess, and my assumption is the board meets quite often, the Board of Trustees quite often, and I can see if we have people that come from the surrounding states that they'd be able to attend most of those meetings, and it would be my thought that you'd want people on that board that are able to attend meetings on a regular basis. And I don't know if there's rules and regulations that we could put into place, but if we get, say, like the major fellow of one of the major software companies in the world, he would be a great asset. But if he cannot make it to the working meetings of the Board of Trustees, then I'm not sure. So I'm thinking there's some real reason that we need this and that it came about, but I'm needing some more confidence in that. And for sure, we want the Board of Trustees to be a good functioning working group, and we don't want a bunch of absentee people on that board. So maybe a handout sheet or something before second reading, maybe some amendment on second reading so we can have some more discussions of that. Because I like the idea as I think about it a little bit, and then I kind of don't like the idea on the other side. So I'm trying to, maybe somebody else can add some conversation to this committee of the whole to give some of us a warm, fuzzy feeling.
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of comments to the good chairman up here. Verifiable and demonstrable interest in and past interactions with the university. I'm having a hard time putting my mind around this and understanding what you're really trying to get at here. I mean, if you were to put this out, and to put the language that's on the other bill out on a voter's bill, I would almost guarantee it'd fail because it's pretty hard to understand what you're trying to get at with this particular phrase in here. So I'm asking you to kind of clarify that for me, please, if you would.
Majority Leader Brown.
Well, Mr. Chairman, first as to the board, I don't know the answer to that. I know that they have some rules. Remember, this is going to be an individual who's appointed by the governor, and if it's an individual who's not going to attend the meetings and show a real commitment to the university, that appointment's not going to occur. And for exactly the same reason, that's why the language is left on the information that would go on the ballot, to make sure people understand that it's not just the governor, but it's with the advice of the and consent of the Wyoming Senate. Those people have to be confirmed by the Senate. So they are going to be people who run through a broad spectrum of inquiries about their commitment to the university and their commitment to participate on the board and be a part, an active part of the governing board of the university. And I don't think all the trustees are at all the meetings necessarily. There's video conferences, there's phone calls, there's email, there's all kinds of stuff. I've just had a glimmer of that. I've not really been on the inside, but I've had a little bit of a look at it, and there's a tremendous amount of activity. That was one of my concerns, is if we get some guy that's running a multinational corporation, guy or gal, is he or she really going to have the time to be a good board member for the university? Well, I don't know. The same thing could happen with somebody in-state. Requiring them to be from in-state and out-of-state instead of out-of-state isn't going to ensure that their participation is any better. And so that's a problem that exists with all of them, and it's a problem that's been handled in the past.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's been indicated that the trustees would be alumni of the university, and I'm trying to find that in the bill, and I'm not seeing it. Okay. Explain to me why that wouldn't be in there. Thank you.
Majority Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, and just to double back, because I didn't answer the other question that was asked, and that is this language in here about, let me get it right, verifiable and demonstrable interest in and past interactions with the university. Well, I think if you take that language as a whole, what does that say? It says it has to be verifiable. That means that it's not a myth, it's common knowledge. It's known by people who can verify, yes, this individual's had interactions with the university. Demonstrable, that means that it can be shown exactly in what respect they've interacted with the university. And it says in and past interactions of the university. So that's got to show us some kind of a track record, some kind of a history of association with the university, that all of which we hope, we think, I think the language is going to make clear, is that somebody that has a connection and an engagement with the university. It does not say they have to be alums. I frankly think that would be a mistake. And some of you, I'll tax your memory a little bit. If we had a representative female in this house who had previously been a trustee of the university who went to Stanford, who I think we would all say was certainly qualified to be a trustee of the university. So there's an example of why the language is the way it is and why we don't require just alums.
Representative Yeagie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The good chairman said they're trying to keep the numbers where it should be. Didn't want to get too big. I'm wondering if going down to 11 would accomplish the same thing as 13. And then the same concern about living here, watching the news every night, seeing what's going on. Just that, you've talked to that a little bit, but those are a couple concerns.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on in favor of this bill, I think this is a great idea. UW has a national and an international reputation, and to be able to step outside of the borders of the state for 2 out of 13 of our trustees so that we actually have some of that national and international expertise coming to the table once every couple of months is just a great idea. So on in favor of this.
Majority Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to the last question, it certainly could go to 11. The thought was that we have a board of 12 that's made up of residents of the state, so that a sponsor's original thought was, we'll add 2 non-residents. And I told you, that leaves us on an even number. We had testimony that it ought to be on an odd number, and instead of going to 15, we would drop back to 13, which is still an addition of 1, but that's the way it was done. Now, as far as I think that's a really good point. I think some of the trustees, and it would still be a majority, it would still be 11 out of 13, are going to be residents of the state. And they're going to live here, and they're going to watch the news every night and know the immediate things that are going on with the university. Although there are some people in our state who can't even get one of our state televisions on their state television set, so how much does that count for? And then no more than 2 are going to be non-residents who are not going to have that same immediate connection. But just look at the presentation that went on in the rotunda this noon. Look at the reach of our university and how many countries it's in. One thing we don't look at enough, I think, in our university is all the research money that pours into this place from all kinds of foundations, public corporations, private corporations. And that money comes in from all over the world, and it doesn't seem unreasonable to have 2 trustees who are not watching the news and seeing the immediate gaffes of the football coach or whomever it may be on a nightly basis, but are in tune with other forces and effects in the world, all of which form a part and a fabric of what our university is about.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In looking at the bill, the joint resolution we just passed, it speaks about two non-residents of the state. This bill talks about two trustees who are residents of states other than Wyoming. So if we're interested in internationalizing our representation, actually, this bill seems more restrictive than the constitutional language. Would the good Majority Floor Leader like to speak to that?
Majority Floor Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I concede the point. If somebody thinks that's an appropriate amendment, it's fair game.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 38 do pass. All those say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No.
Opposed.
Senate File 38 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Majority Rep. Stepson may have the
Mr.
floor.
Mr. Chairman, can I have privileges of the floor?
Yes.
Members of the 62nd, I'd like you to welcome. We have a group of kids from Natrona County up in the balcony that are homeschool kids and some of their chaperones. And if you guys would please stand, please recognize and welcome them.
Representative Locks.
Mr. Speaker, may I have privilege of the floor, please?
Yes.
Up in the balcony on my right side here is my son, Matthew Locks. He is a graduate of the University of Wyoming, as well as here representing Casper College. As a Board of Trustees, he is here for the Wyoming Association of Community College events going on. And next to him also is Charlie, who is, I think there's a couple other Casper College board members here. I saw Kathy Dolan somewhere, and Charlie Robinson. Both are here from Casper College. So welcome to the People's House.
The next bill for our consideration is Representative Kasparik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With a little trepidation about being repetitive, I'm going to draw your attention to another guy up here on the south balcony. Not exactly my guy, but one of my newest commissioners, Commissioner Mark Christensen.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the balcony, as I said, I'll spare the... It's not very often we get folks from Casper, but today is a beautiful day because all these people from the county was number one on your license plates and number one in our hearts. And I'd like to introduce you to a constituent of mine, Mr. Kyle True, up here in the balcony. Welcome.
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Up in the balcony with the homeschoolers is my guy, my husband, the invisible man, Alan Harvey.
Representative Freeman.
Directly in front of me is a woman I served with on the Western Wyoming Community Board of Trustees, Lynn Chatty.
Thank you. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 17. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 17 is introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to community juvenile services, authorizing counties to be direct grant recipients of community juvenile services grants, modifying grant eligibility and requirements, conforming provisions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 17, engrossing Community Juvenile Services, respectfully reports saying back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, 2 no votes, Representatives Halverson and Watt, signed by Representative Crone, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 17 do pass. And I can give the long explanation or the real short explanation. The short explanation is this. We created community juvenile service boards back in 1997. Then in 2008, we did some amendments and changed them a little bit. And then over the interim, the Judiciary Committee met with the counties that were not had not set one up. So most counties have set them up. A few counties had not set them up. And there were some concerns as to why they hadn't set one up. And those counties expressed what their concerns were. So this bill, it doesn't affect any of the counties that already have one set up. It doesn't affect you. But for counties that haven't set one up, what this does is address some of their concerns. And the primary concern was, under the bill that was written in 97, it said that a community juvenile service board need to be set up under a Joint Powers Act. So what you actually end up doing is creating a separate legal entity that can sue and be sued in its own name. Some counties weren't comfortable with that. They wanted it to be more of an advisory board back to the county commissioners, and we didn't see any real issue with that. And then in the middle of the bill, we told them to have a strategic plan, but we never really told them what we wanted in the strategic plan. So in page 4 and 5, we sort of list out what that plan entails. But unless there's any questions, I'll leave it at that.
Call for the question. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House File 3017 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 17 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 67. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 67 is introduced from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to criminal procedure, modifying authorization for communication interception, PIN registers, and trap and trace devices, clarifying conditions and procedure for communication interception, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 67, engrossed wiretap authorization, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Halverson, Crone, Walters, and Watt, 2 no votes, Representative Croker and Miller, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 67 do pass, and I turn over the explanation to the good representative from Cody.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the House, I bring to you Senate File 67, and for a bit of a background on the current law, Wyoming statute does allow for wiretaps currently under very specific conditions, and those conditions all relate to enforcement of the Controlled Substances Act of 1971. So how it works now and how the system works now is if law enforcement receives information that there's drug transactions going on and they wish to use the wiretapping authority, they need to go to a district court judge. They state to the district court judge what their probable cause is, what they believe the facts of and circumstances of the particular case are. They also have to tell the district court judge that they've used every other means available to them in terms of law enforcement tools. That would be search warrants, informants, etc., and that the wiretap authority is one of the only means that they can use in order to stop the crime and eventually prosecute the crime. And under 73705, the subsections include some other crimes, but they have to be, under the current law, they have to be discovered as a result of drug trafficking. And those crimes are murder, kidnapping, first or second degree sexual assault, robbery, blackmail, burglary, or felony larceny. Now, what this bill does is expand the scope of what crimes law enforcement can use in terms of using the authority for a wiretap. And it adds to the list those crimes that were listed under the drug transaction. So murder, kidnapping, first or second degree sexual assault, robbery, and it also adds blackmail and escape. And basically what this bill does, it separates the wiretap authority from drug transactions. So if law enforcement has exhausted other remedies and believes that a wiretap is appropriate to solve a murder or to find someone who's escaped from prison, this bill would allow that to happen. In addition, the same safeguards that are in place under the existing law would be in place under this bill. So the same high level of probable cause, they have to show cause that they've used every other means necessary in order to do that. And basically, the rationale for this is that there are certain serious crimes where the apprehension of those criminals is important to do right away. And murder and kidnapping and first and second degree sexual assault are certainly within that category. So you would have a situation where you would have a murder, or like we had in my neck of the woods, a kidnapping and a sexual assault, where the apprehension of that person is essential, and it's essential that it happens quickly, and it's essential that a tool would be used for this. So what 67 does is expand that limited scope for wiretaps to those other serious crimes. Now, wiretaps are not used very often because they are so serious and because they are such an intrusion. They're not regularly used. They're expensive. They require large amounts of manpower, and they should only be used sparingly. And that's what this bill does. But it expands the nature of those crimes to the serious crimes that I listed. So I would ask for your support of this measure. It's an important tool for law enforcement for the most serious crimes that we face. And with that, I would take any questions.
Representative Nichols.
Thank you. I've got an amendment coming to this for this bill, but I would say that that's a slight mischaracterization of what this bill does. Please read the language carefully. Because what this does is it says if you have knowledge that someone's committed a crime, then you go to the judge and say, we know this person has committed a crime, so we want to wiretap, get your texts, get your emails, and they can go out and do the conviction. But if they don't want to do the conviction, they can sit there and witch hunt for month after month after month over anybody's emails or any contact anyone has with that emails. So you got to read the language pretty carefully on this, because there's a fairly significant intrusion how this bill can be used the way that it's crafted. Thank you.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to address some of those concerns raised by the good representative from the capital city, first of all, there's an existing body of law in regard to wiretapping. So there's an existing body of federal law, there's an existing body of state law. And those laws have made it very narrow and very very specific as to what can be heard, what the duration of the wiretap. For example, if you have a wiretap that's been authorized by a district court judge, You're listening into a conversation. In that conversation, there's no description of criminal activity that goes on. Law enforcement has to shut that conversation down. And only has, if there's 2 minutes, and that's based on case law, 2 minutes of non-related information, not related to the crime, then they have to stop. So that is, it's very narrow and it's very rarely used. And I do believe that the safeguards are in place. And I think it's important to mention that in 73707, one of the things that has to be shown to a district court judge is a full and complete statement as to whether or not other investigatory procedures have been tried and have failed, or why they reasonably appear to be unlikely to succeed. So this is a situation of last resort for law enforcement. It is an intrusion, should be used sparingly, and the safeguards are in place.
Chairman Gingery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also just wanted to point out, here's what the bill is doing. It, right now, you can already do this if you're investigating a drug crime. So drugs, you can already do this with, a violation of the Wyoming Controlled Substance Act. You can actually already do wiretaps for murder, kidnapping, sexual assault, robbery, blackmail, burglary, if it's related to a drug crime. So if you're investigating a drug crime and you hear something about a murder, you can continue to do the wiretap and investigate that murder. What this bill is doing is saying, okay, why are we just doing wiretaps for drug cases? We can also do wiretaps, and this is what the bill is doing on page 2. It's adding murder, kidnapping, sexual assault, robbery, blackmail, escape. Those are the crimes that we're adding. So if you're dealing with a sexual assault, so somebody's been raped, and you're trying to figure that out, you can do a wiretap. Or if you're trying to solve a murder, you can do a wiretap. Or like what happened in community where the last speaker was speaking from, if there's a kidnapping, you can do a wiretap. Why would we not allow wiretaps for these very serious crimes, but we're okay with wiretaps for drug crimes? That's the policy decision. That should wiretaps just be for drug crimes, or can we also use wiretaps for these more serious crimes, such as murder, kidnapping, and sexual assault?
Representative Crone?
Just one final comment. The authority for this type of wiretap for these crimes already exists in federal law. And so if there's an interstate connection between a murder, a kidnapping, sexual assault, say you have someone in this state that travels to the state south of us, the authority exists now under federal law for the wiretap under the same set of circumstances as described in this bill. This just provides our law enforcement with that same tool. With that, and seeing no further questions, Mr. Chair, I would call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that file number 67 do pass. All those say aye. Opposed, no. Senate file 67 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 98. The reading clerk will read the bill. File.
Senate File 98 is introduced by Senator Perkins, an act relating to trade practices, providing for extension of time-based en force majeure provisions in new motor vehicle warranty requirements and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 98, Engrossed Motor Vehicle Lemon Law, respectfully reports saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingery, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt. One no vote, Representative Halverson, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 98 do pass, and I turn over the explanation to the good representative from Casper.
Majority Whip Stepson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill before you, Senate File 98, is meant to address circumstances that actually we have seen in this state over the last couple of years, and it addresses the lemon law. And you'll see that this section, Section J, refers back up to subsection D of the statute. And that section sets forth two timelines, one being that within 1 year of a purchase of a vehicle, a manufacturer must bring that vehicle into compliance with warranty requirements. The other one is that there's a 30-day requirement. If the vehicle is out of service for more than 30 days, then a replacement vehicle has to be provided to the customer. What this bill does is it talks about there, and this is fairly common among the states, that there are some circumstances that auto dealers just can't meet those deadlines, and this specifically spells out that it's in the event of war, invasion, act of terror, civil unrest, strike, fire, flood, etc. And where we saw it actually recently was when the tsunami occurred in the Far East. There were a number of auto dealers in the state that weren't able to meet the timelines because the parts that were required to fix the vehicles were manufactured in the Far East, and those factories were taken out of commission by the tsunami. And so the dealers in our state were really in a position where it was impossible to comply with the law, and as a result, there were a number of cars given to the customers. So what this says is those deadlines still apply, and the extension only applies to the extent that there is a natural disaster. So, for example, if a factory's down out of commission for 2 months, it would be 1 year plus 2 months, or 30 days plus 2 months. And it's just really to give the auto dealers in the state coverage in those circumstances where they can't help it and where they can't they're prevented from complying with the law. So with that, I would take any questions that you might have on the bill.
Is there a question has been called? All those in favor of Chairman Gingrich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that file number 98 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate file 98 has passed to the Committee of the Whole. Division has been called. All those in favor, please stand. Senate File 38 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 124. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 124, introduced by Senator Perkins, an act relating to liens, providing a process for a governmental official or employee to seek discharge of groundless liens, specifying procedures, providing for discharge of the claim of lien, specifying applicability, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 124, engrossed frivolous liens, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connery, Gingrich, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Walters, and Watt. One no vote, Representative Miller, signed by Representative Gingrich, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 124 do pass. And I turn over the explanation to the good gentleman from Casper.
Majority Whip Stubson, will you please do... Chairman... Gingrich, move the standing committee first. Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'll move the standing committee amendment and we could just handle that real quick. It was so important that there was some discussion to move it to March 15th rather than July 1st for implementation. And if there's no questions on that, I'd ask for an aye vote on the standing committee amendment.
Question has been called. You have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? And it has been called. Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one to Senate file 124 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Majority Whip Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You'll see some of you on the floor will remember we went through a lien revision process a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I guess. This particular issue is popping up more frequently across the state, but it involves either federal, state, or local officials, government officials, having liens filed against their property, basically in retaliation for their fulfilling their duties. And we, my home county, we saw a case where a guy got in a dispute about the use of his property and ended up filing liens against all the county commissioners, all the city councilmen, all the judges involved, law enforcement officers that had anything to do with it. And all those folks under the current statute have to go retain counsel, file a petition, demonstrate the lien's frivolous, and get it knocked out. And so what this does, back up another circumstance that I've seen a number of times across the state, sheriff's deputies, for example, fulfilling their duties in a foreclosure proceeding, and the person who's being foreclosed against gets mad, files a lien against the individual sheriff's officers against their properties because they're just doing, you know, what they're required to do under the law. So what this does is it sets up a mechanism, a more efficient mechanism for knocking off those frivolous liens, and it does so in a way that protects legitimate liens, and certainly the process is there so that if you have a legitimate lien against a government official, it's fairly easy to keep it on. But the process, as outlined here, is if there is a frivolous lien, for example, if somebody gets mad at you for your vote and files a lien against your house because of it, you can turn around and file an affidavit in the records that says this is a lien that was filed in retaliation for me fulfilling my duties. And you have to serve notice on the person filing the lien that you have filed this affidavit. They can then turn around and file a petition to determine the validity of the lien. And within 6 to 15 days, this is on page 3, they have to appear in front of a court and just say, this is a legitimate lien, here's why I filed it. And then the process moves on as it normally would if they demonstrate that it is, in fact, a valid lien or at least colorably valid. If they do not show up, which is, I think, going to often be the case, if they don't show up at that hearing, then the court issues a certificate that's filed in the land records, and the lien goes away. And so this is a more efficient process for these frivolous liens to get knocked off. It ensures that, you know, government officials don't have to incur substantial attorney's fees just to answer to retaliation for their doing their official duties. So with that, I would take any questions anyone may have on the bill.
Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Ginkrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 124 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 124 has passed, the Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 62. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 62, as introduced by Senator Coe, an act relating to the State Board of Education, modifying membership as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom is referred Senate File 62, State Board of Education membership, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Paxton, Piperinen, Summers, and Teeters. One no vote, Representative Patton, Signed by Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 62 do pass. I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. The Standing Committee Amendment provided that the appointments within the State School Board rotate among the several counties that are comprised of each district, similar to the way we do it with the Brand Board. And it would provide some regional variation in representation on that board. I would ask for your aye vote, and I would call for the question if there aren't any questions.
Question has been called. You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? The question has been called. Question, Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in opposition to the amendment. The appointment of the board has been in the past without rotation of the counties within the district. The result is that we have a board now that is comprised representing the respective portions of the state by virtue of what was thought to be an equitable distribution of population. Now, at the last moment, and everybody was all for what was going on here and what the bill was really about, came the spontaneous amendment that it should be rotated within the counties. And the observation was made, well, that's in the takes the advantage of the appointees then to the small counties. So here we had the ugly representation of urban versus rural in this body. I resist that. This government was about people, not about fences, not about county lines, not about political subdivisions, but about people. If it wasn't for people, we wouldn't need this legislature. We wouldn't need any government at all. So let's just leave the way that it was and have the representation by the districts be compounded just as senators represent more than one county. They represent a balance of people. Just as we, in our representative body here, represent people. So I move and that you defeat the committee amendment and allow it to remain by the districts as it was previously done.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, I stand on and on and for this amendment. And I brought this amendment. This is done currently in the Livestock Board. It's done in the Department of the Commission for the Wyoming YDOT Commission and the Game and Fish Commission. It's simply a means by which you kind of ensure that through a rotation, mind you, this State Board of Education is made up by districts that are appointed by district and appointments that are at-large statewide positions. So it's not really limiting that. And a governor currently doesn't have to appoint anybody from a city. He could appoint anybody from anywhere in the state, any city in the state. This just provides a means by which other boards do this, by you'd ensure that a county over the course of time would have some representation on that board. Thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, I would urge you to support the amendment, and the amendment was also supported by the primary sponsor of the bill.
You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment, and are you ready for the question? The question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 62 has been defeated. We are back in the bill. Division has been called. All those in favor stand.
35.
The amendment has passed. And we are back on the bill. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would turn the bill over to the good sponsor from Cody.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've had quite a bit of a very healthy and robust debate this session about education. We've talked about accountability. We've talked about requirements of our districts. The purpose of Senate File 62 is really to add a level of expertise on the state board that we've talked quite a bit about what our individual districts should be doing and what our individual school board should be doing. So basically, as the existing statute stands today under 21-2301, there are some specific requirements of types of people that need to be on the board, and those include a certified classroom teacher, a certified school administrator, and then two members of the board that would be appointed from private business and industry. What this bill does is add another requirement that at least one member of the board be an active school district board of trustees member to be included in that board. On page 2, to walk you through the bill, it talks about how that provision would work, that on or after March 1st of 2013, and upon the expiration of the respective terms, which I think is an important language, that would, at that time, then one representative would be appointed from a school district, a board of trustees, and also makes the members from the industry and private business to be at-large members. So I think when we're talking about all the requirements that we have districts doing, it makes a lot of sense to have an actual active school board member on the state board as well, and I would ask for your support of this bill. Seeing no questions, I'd call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with some enthusiasm, that the recommendation to Bill Senate File 62 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Thank you. Senate File 62 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 4. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File Number 4, as introduced by Senator Geis, an act relating to livestock, imposing liability for the failure to give notice of diseased livestock as specified, providing damages for false claims, assigning burdens of proof, providing exceptions to liability, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 4, engrossed, Livestock Disease Reporting Liability, respectfully reports saying back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlich, Winters, and Danswanitzer, signed by Representative Semlich, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Chairman Semlich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 4 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I will explain the amendment as I explain the bill. This bill has to do with our Title 11 livestock statutes that deal with duty of the public to report a disease, and it specifically in the language you find on the bottom of page 1 has to do with a person who knows that they have in their possession or any livestock. And the livestock, first part of the Standing Committee Amendment defines what the livestock is there in 1120.101. Any person who knows they have in the possession livestock that is infected by any disease that's been formally declared by the Wyoming Livestock Board as being potentially economically devastating, for which there's a valid diagnostic test, and transfers that ownership could be liable. So what we've had, and we've had some cases here in Wyoming where people, owners of livestock have had a disease, and the one I'm thinking of is a disease that we find in sheep called Brucella ovis. It's not a disease that you can look at the animal and tell that it's infected. Trichomoniasis in our cattle is another disease. You look at them, they look perfectly normal, but they're harboring a disease that we have tests for. What this bill says is, if you are owner of some of those livestock, and you know that these animals have disease, and the disease that's going to be declared by the with a list declared by the livestock board, so we'll know specifically what these diseases are. We don't have a list for them yet, but they can do that by rulemaking. And if you have an animal that has a disease that's on this list, and there's a valid test for it, and you sell them animals with knowing that you can be subject to liability, and you can recover those damages, and you go on down on page 2, it tells you what the extent of those damages can be. In fact, it says in line 18 that you'd be liable for 3 times the damages caused by the false claim plus reasonable attorney fees. There is a burden of proof necessary, of course, and it only applies to the transfer of the animals from the person who knows they have disease to the next animal, or to the next person, excuse me, so it doesn't go on down the line. Subsection E, the second part of the Standing Committee Amendment you see here in line 22, no person who has received written notice that an animal is infected, we took out may be and we added is infected with the disease identified in the subsection above, prior to acquiring or assuming possession of the infected animal shall be entitled to the damages. So if you know that has occurred, then you cannot claim some liability. We have exempted on page 3 livestock markets with the provision that they did not know that the facility, or they did not know the disease, or the disease was not reported to the facility, and the facility provided written notice of the disease to the person claiming damages. So that is what this bill does. And again, we've had an actual case in Wyoming where a person knew that they had it. It was confirmed by a test, and they just wanted to get rid of their problem to someone else. And these are the ones that I've mentioned. These two are reproductive diseases, and they can really diminish the value of your herd. So it just provides this protection, and I'll try to answer any questions if you have any.
Question has been called. Oh, pardon me. Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question of the good chairman. So is the purpose of this bill to encourage people to you know, essentially tell the public health officials or somebody that their cow is infected, and is that what it's about?
Chairman Semlich.
In fact, to the good representative from Calma County, there is, in 1119-102, there's already a requirement for people who have livestock that have infected disease, a duty to report that. That's already in statute. This just goes on to say that if you have animals that you know are infected and you sell them to someone else without telling them that and cause some economic damage to them, that you can be held liable for that.
Representative Blickley?
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Chairman, then my next question about that is what about if you don't report that you have a sick animal but you keep it? How does that fit under this?
Chairman Sedman.
That doesn't really apply to the provisions that we have put forth in this bill. It would apply, however, to if that animal had a disease that's on the reportable disease list, then you have a duty to report that. That's a part of this section, but it's not really a part of this bill. And, Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions, I'd call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Question has been called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 4 do pass. All those in favor enthusiastically say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 4 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Majority Leader Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. Thank you.
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. Senate File 26, recommended do pass. Senate File 27, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 30, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 33, recommended do pass. Senate File 39, recommended do pass. Senate File 68, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 76, amended, recommended do pass. Representative Brown moved that the House rise and sit again at 2 p.m. House reconvened at 2. Senate File 82, recommended do pass. Senate File 105, amended as follows, and further amended, recommended do pass. The Senate Joint Resolution 1, recommended do pass. Senate File 38, recommended do pass. Senate File 17, recommended do pass. Senate File 67, recommended do pass. Senate File 98, recommended do pass. Senate File 124, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 62, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 4, amended, recommended do pass. And it is signed by Representative Blevins, Chairman.
Representative Blevins.
I move that the Committee of the Whole rise.
How about you move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report?
I'll do that. I don't have a cue card. I move that the Committee of the Whole adopt the motion of the whole Committee of the Whole report.
It's been moved that the Committee of the Whole report be adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed, no. Congratulate all the motion. The Committee of the Whole report has been adopted. Representative Yagi, privilege of the floor.
Thank you. Before we go, I have two folks that I'd really like to recognize. Drove all the way over from Evanston. We have the Republican County Chairman And member, this is Ron Wild and Dave Bassett, part of our workforce services over there. Appreciate them being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gentlemen, welcome to the House. We are at that order of business of messages from the Senate.
Message number 228, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 4, Brands, the House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated, ayes 29, noes 0, 1 excused. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments, and it assigns Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 229, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 12, Contagious and Infectious Diseases Among Livestock, ayes 29, excused 1, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, bill listed below, this is message 230, the message below, I passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated, House Bill 17, School Capital Construction Enrollment Methodology, ayes 29, noes 0, 1 excused, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 231, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 38, the use of water outside the state. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form and as follows by the vote indicated, ayes 29, noes 0, excused 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments, and that is signed by Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
At that order of business, a request to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. The first message for our consideration is message number 228 on House Bill 4. Chairman Semlett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on House Bill 38 and ask for your aye vote. We had a representative
Chairman,
in this
Chairman
body.
Semlett, Chairman Semlett, we're on House Bill 4. Do you have that message by any chance? Message 228.
I do. My apologies. Let's start over again. All right, Mr. Speaker, I move concurrence on House Bill 4, and I still ask for your aye vote. There's three changes that come to us from over on the other side here. The first one was just a change in some language in the enacting clause on the brand bill, authorizing fees for re-recording. Remember, what we're doing here is setting up a provision for delinquent brands. So with that in mind, the dates become pretty important. And the second part of the concurrence report went to further clarifying exactly what the dates were in some of that language. And then the third thing was just to give the Livestock Board the ability to promulgate rules and regulations. And the fourth thing in the concurrence report was to make the bill effective immediately upon completion of all the acts. So, again, Mr. Speaker, I would ask for concurrence on House Bill 4 with your aye vote.
Discussion. Representative Zwana Turdan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Maybe more of a point of order, since this is the first time we've seen a concurrence this session for the new members, if we could just have the background on explain what we're about to do and why it's important.
Sure. The Senate had some changes to our bill. We're going to vote whether we like those changes or whether we want to go to a conference committee. The chairman has recommended that we just accept the Senate's changes. If you vote to accept the Senate, an aye vote is a vote to accept the Senate's changes and pass the bill as is. A no vote is a request to go to a conference committee that maybe we need to talk about some of those changes. Anybody have any questions about that? Yep.
Representative Baker, look for message number 228 on House Bill 4, which is the list of all of the changes. Any other discussion? Representative Croker? Question having been called, we're voting on a motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 4. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll. And this will be your recorded vote when people ask how you voted on this bill if it passes. So the chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker. Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey. Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lauk,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
aye.
Petrov,
aye.
Pieperinen,
aye.
Reeder,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Cheaters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Throne, aye. Wallace,
aye.
Walters,
aye.
Watt,
aye.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60-aye.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 4. The next bill for our consideration is message number 231 on House Bill 38. Chairman Semler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on House Bill 38 and ask for your aye vote. A number of years ago, we had a member of this body from the center of the state that was really kind of a sticker on the word such and the. As you can see in the conference report, we still have a legislator from the center of the state, from the other body, that's still a sticker on such and the. That's the only change in this concurrence report. And I would ask for your aye vote.
Such as it is. We are voting on a motion to concur on Senate amendments to House Bill 38. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker,
aye.
Barlow,
aye.
Berger,
aye.
Blake,
aye.
Blevins,
aye.
Blickrey,
aye.
Brown,
aye.
Burkhart,
aye.
Bird,
aye.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Coleman,
aye.
Coleman,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Filer,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay, Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lauks,
aye.
Madden, Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
aye.
Petrov,
aye.
Pieperinen,
aye.
Reeder,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Cheaters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Walters,
aye.
Watt,
aye.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60-aye.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 38. The next order of business is reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred the Senate File 11 and Gross Circuit Court Magistrates respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Gingrey, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt. One no vote, Representative Baker, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 53, Partition Actions, subject to subdivision laws, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Baker, Connolly, Gingrey, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, the committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 114 engrossed, Assault of Health Care Providers, respectfully reports saying back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Gingrey, Croker, and Crone. Those who voted no, Representative Baker, Miller, Walter, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 117, engrossed, Confidentiality of Domestic Abuse Victim Information, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Gingrey, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters. Those who voted no, Representatives Baker, Halverson, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 127, Lien Notice, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingrey, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watt, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 159, engrossed, Threats of Bodily Injury or Death, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Connolly, Gingrey, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, and Watts, signed by Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 7, engrossed Conservation District's Special Expertise, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlick, Winters, Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Semlick, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 31, engrossed Wyoming Veterinarian Medical Practice Act, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlick, Winters, and Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Semlick, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 70, engrossed Land Possessor Duty to Trespasser, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Greer, Hunt, McKim, Semlick, Winters, Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Semlick, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 5, engrossed Insurance Limited Lines, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, the Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 36, engrossed Insurance Publication Requirements, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Blickery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, Dan Zwanitzer, Signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 113, Insurance Guarantee Association Act Amendments, respectfully report saying back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berger, Bleckery, Byrd, Gay, Green, Kirkbride, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 60, Engrossed, Medicaid Reform, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasparic, Larson, Throne, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 73, Engrossed, Unemployment Insurance, Federal Compliance, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasparic, Larson, Throne, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
Just a reminder, brothers and sisters, if you want budget amendments on third reading, they have to be in by 5 p.m. today. We're at that order of business of reading and signing enrolled acts. The first enrolled act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act Number 2, being original House Bill Number 12. The reading clerk will read the enrolled act.
An act relating to contagious and infectious diseases among livestock.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 2, being original House Bill Number 12. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is House Enrolled Act Number 3, being original House Bill 17. The reading clerk will read the enrolled act.
An act relating to school capital construction.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 3, being original House Bill 17. I have so signed. We're now at that order of business of re-referrals. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I respectfully request referral of Senate File 60 to your Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, it is so ordered. We're now at that order of business of committee announcements. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet in 10 minutes after adjournment tonight in H-17 to discuss the following bills. Senate File 130, Professional Licensing Military. Senate File 74, Engrossed, Professional Licensing Military Spouses. Senate File 44, First Responder Retirement Account Payment Rules. Senate File 46, Protecting Veteran Disability Compensation and Divorce. And Senate File 78, Active Duty Medical Cost Reimbursement Program Amendments.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, are going to meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in Room H18 to consider Senate File 23, Challenge Loans Program, Natural Gas Vehicle Infrastructure, and Senate File 52, Natural Gas State Vehicles.
Chairman Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning to go over Senate File 149, Complementary Hunting Licenses, and Senate File 155, Big Game Licenses, Archery Licenses.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Friday, February 8th, 10 minutes upon noon recess in room H-17, where we will hear Senate File 83, Engrossed, Medicaid Fraud Recovery.
We're back at that order of business of signing Senate-enrolled acts. We just got a whole pile of them, and rather than doing them tomorrow late in the afternoon, let's get them done today, if that's okay, brothers and sisters. I'm about to sign Senate-enrolled act, or... We're at that order of business of Senate Enrolled Act Number 2 being original Senate file number 2. The reading clerk will read the Enrolled Act.
An act relating to oil and gas.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 2 being original Senate file number 2. I have so signed. The next order for our business, the next bill for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act Number 3, being original Senate File 3. The reading clerk will read the Enrolled Act.
An act relating to oil and gas.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 3, being original Senate File Number 3. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act Number 4, being original Senate File Number 8. No, you handed her two.
Okay.
The reading clerk will read the Enrolled Act.
An act relating to oil and gas.
I'm about to sign original Senate Enrolled Act Number 4, being original Senate File Number 8. I have so signed. The next bill for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act Number 6, Number 5, being original Senate File Number 10. The reading clerk will read the Enrolled Act.
An act relating to the Supreme Court.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 5, being original Senate File Number 10. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act Number 6, being original Senate File Number 12.
An act relating to child support payments.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 6, being original Senate File Number 12. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act Number 7, being original Senate File Number 13. The reading clerk will read the Enrolled Act.
An act relating to the Uniform Commercial Code.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 7, being original Senate File Number 13. I have so signed. The next act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act Number 8, being original Senate File 14. The reading clerk will read the act.
An act relating to penal institutions.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 8, being original Senate File Number 14. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act Number 9, being original Senate File 15.
An act relating to penal institutions.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 9, being original Senate File Number 15. I have so signed. The last Senate Enrolled Act for our consideration today is Senate Enrolled Act Number 10, being original Senate File Number 18. The reading clerk will read the Enrolled Act.
An act relating to surveyors and engineers.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 10, being original Senate File Number 18. I have so signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Speaker, tomorrow we'll do a second reading on the bills we did on general file today. Then we will do third reading on the budget bill, House Bill 1, with all the amendments, which I think there's something in the order of 30 out there, and more are on their way. And then we'll do general file after that, and the general file will be in the order that's left on your yellow sheet with a new list coming, and I'll be surprised if we get very deep into the general file list tomorrow. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, February 8, 2013.
You have heard the motion. All in favor of adjourning until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, February 8, 2013, please say aye. Opposed, same sign. We're still in session. All right. All in favor, please rise. The House is adjourned until tomorrow, February 8, 2013 at 9:30 a.m.